This talk was recorded at Against the Stream Buddhist Meditation Society in Los Angeles and is freely offered for your enjoyment. For more information, please visit againstthestream.org.
Usually we start introducing ourselves to each other and then have a meditation and then a talk after the meditation. Sometimes I do it the other way, especially if I want to explain the meditation a bit before we sit. I had been, the last four times I've been at Monday nights over the last month, a little over a month, I went through the teachings that are referred to as the Brahma Viharas, the four heart qualities that we are trying to develop, that the Buddha said were uncovered. He said, when I came to the end of suffering, and I no longer had hatred for pain, no longer had aversion, no longer experienced hatred, resentment, when I no longer was attached, no longer clinging to pleasure, no longer in a state of craving for pleasure, but I was at ease, relaxed, nirvana, free from craving and aversion, free from self-centeredness, belief in a permanent self. He said all that remained was a feeling of loving kindness, of a phrase or a feeling of may all beings be at ease, metta, we call it, loving kindness. No longer meeting even the most ignorant and confused people in the world with ill will, but meeting them with a sense of unconditional friendliness and compassion for their pain, for their confusion. He said, and also there was an empathetic response, not only to pain, but also an empathetic response to pleasure, to happiness, to joy, what we call sympathetic or empathetic happiness, joy. He said, and with compassion, loving kindness, and appreciative joy, there was also equanimity. And so the last four times that I was here, over the last month and a half or so, we went through those four teachings and did those four practices. We would refer to these in a larger sense as heart practices. One perspective says, and in one teaching, the Buddha says, mindfulness, the vipassana, the insight, the mindfulness practice, will lead to the uncovering of these heart qualities, that they're already here in all of us. Compassion is part of our true nature, loving kindness, equanimity, appreciative joy, it's already in us, and it just has to be uncovered, excavated, revealed, or recovered. And that's a lot of what mindfulness is doing. It helps us to uncover, to reveal. And then in another way, to another group of people in the teachings, the Buddha would say, don't wait for this to be uncovered, but actually develop it. These seeds are here, water them, excavate them, train the mind to be kind. Train the mind to be compassionate. Train the mind to be appreciative or equanimous. In the Metta Sutta, he says, in order to come to metta, which means loving kindness or unconditional friendliness, he says, in order to come to this state, we have to forgive everyone, including ourselves. In order to come to a true feeling of loving kindness, we have to look at the resentments that we've been holding. He says, wishing no harm upon any living being, not having spite or ill will towards any living being, not doing the slightest thing that would cause harm to another, and this kind of really high level of integrity and this high level of forgiveness. I know when I first heard that, my own mind was like, how would it be possible to not have resentments towards anyone? Is that even a human capacity to not resent, to not have ill will, to not wish harm upon any living being? And quite early in my meditation practice, I came to meditation with a lot of anger towards others, a lot of hatred, a lot of resentments, a lot of self-hatred, a lot of guilt and shame and remorse and regret, and blame towards myself, and a lot of shame about how I'd hurt others, And so I was taught the forgiveness meditation pretty early on. And the forgiveness meditation in some ways would be a prerequisite to really being able to have what we call metta, loving kindness. Maybe enough metta practice would lead to forgiveness. But the way that I was taught it was, learn to forgive yourself. Learn to forgive others and to ask for forgiveness from those that you've harmed. One of the ways that I have made sense of this, I like both perspectives that I said about the heart practices. I like the uncovering that this is a recovery process. Usually about half of the people in a room when I'm teaching are in recovery, addicts in recovery, the other half aren't. But I like the perspective, anyways, that really what we're doing is trying to recover some natural goodness that's always been here, but that's buried, it's not our fault that it's buried. It's buried underneath the human survival instinct of craving and aversion. We're all born into a body that hates pain and a mind that resents those who cause us pain and resents ourselves when we cause ourselves pain. So I don't think that hatred is a moral issue. I don't think it's about, like, you're a bad person, you're full of hate. Hatred is a conditioned attitude, but that it's fueled by a completely impersonal, instinctual drive to avoid pain. And that it's not your fault. It's not our fault that we hate pain. The human mind seems to, all by itself, resent. And this is a very different perspective. Usually we take everything so personal that we're like, I have a resentment. I fucking hate you. Yes. Or I fucking hate myself. Or, you know, or I feel so terrible about, you know, how I caused some other people harm. And my mom's watching on Facebook Live. So I'm going to keep it clean. What I'm trying to say is that I think forgiveness practice is a necessity, that we actually have to train our minds to forgive. I think that the human mind is sort of a resenting machine. All by itself. It's not your fault that you have anger at people who've hurt you. Your mind does that all by itself. You're not sitting here like concocting, like, I'm going to get pissed. And I'm going to stay pissed for like 30 years. And I'm going to hold that motherfucker in a fixed view. And I'm going to suffer about that resentment for decades. Right? Did any of us make that decision? Like, 30 years ago, did you say, like, I'm going to stay mad forever, as long as I can? Some people are like, yeah, I totally did that. I totally did that. My feeling is that actually the human brain does it all by itself. And that even when you really, really, you know, you start practicing meditation and the Dharma and you say, I want to be free from suffering. And I see how much suffering my resentments cause me. I see how much suffering my guilt and shame cause me. I want to purify my karma. I want to be free from suffering. We set that intention, some of you decades ago, some of you newer to it. And you kind of ask your mind politely, please stop hating. Please stop resenting. Let's be kind and compassionate and forgiving. And your mind says, go fuck yourself. On some level or another, you know, you tell your mind, let's not forget, let's let go. And your mind says, totally unsafe to let go. You need to stay angry. It's protecting you. You need to stay mad. You need to suffer at them for as long as possible. And forgiveness, you know, the Buddha said this whole path goes against the stream. He talked about it as such a radical act to bring compassion. Counter-instinctual, against our survival instincts. Hatred is an instinctual drive. And so there's the big hatred, and then there's just the lower level resentments and aversions and judgments and self-righteous indignation. I want to invite you guys in. I don't want you to have to stand out there. If you come in, is there any seats open?
There's room already.
No seats, but there are some cushions. And are there some plastic chairs out there that they could get in the back room, maybe, Morgan? Thank you. What I want to... I was talking to somebody earlier today, and we were talking about this process of coming to a place in our lives where we weren't suffering anymore and where we could live with integrity and feel blameless. And he said to me, how long did it take and to feel that way, being in early stages of it? And I had to be honest and say, for me, about 10 years. I started forgiveness meditation really early in my practice. And I didn't like it at all. It didn't feel soothing. It didn't feel very helpful. But what I knew when I started practicing, when I came to Buddhism, I got some relief from mindfulness. That was the hook for me. Mindfulness was a hook. Like, oh, there's something here. There's some relief here. Learning how to ignore my mind, fucking sign me up. My mind sucks. I want to learn how to ignore it. And that's what I was learning in early mindfulness practice. Pay attention to your breath, ignore your mind. But then, you know, as soon as I started studying and going to retreats and classes, developing relationship with some teachers, and you know, and then my dad's a teacher and he's the forgiveness guy, and so he's like, you have to forgive yourself. It's like, you have to forgive me. I was like, I forgive you. He's like, you're full of shit. You don't forgive me. And for the first couple of years, I did the forgiveness practice pretty regularly. Not every single day, but it was a very regular part of my practice once I committed to it. And I'd sit there and I'd say to myself, I forgive you. And my mind, you know, and I know I'm being kind of irreverent about it, but honestly, my mind would say, this is bullshit. And I'd say, I forgive you anyways. But my mind really didn't like forgiveness. It felt like, this is unsafe, this is vulnerable, this is letting go of what has been protecting you from the world, from your pain, from... And I kept doing it. I don't know why. I think only faith is the only way I can say it, is that I had verified faith that mindfulness worked and gave me some relief. And then Buddhism is just like, okay, this Buddhist path, I'm going to do it. I'm going all in. I'm going to do it. I'm going to follow the teacher's instructions and I'm going to do it. And they said forgiveness, loving kindness, compassion. And I did it without feeling like it was helping that much for quite a while. And it might have taken even a couple of years of doing the forgiveness practice before my mind started to say, okay, we're doing this again. And not complaining and not making, you know, kind of coming back with all of the reasons why I didn't deserve forgiveness, or they didn't deserve forgiveness, or I was unforgivable, or whatever it was. So for me, it was a real process. That's not everyone's experience. Some people do these forgiveness meditations and they're like, oh, what a so beautiful to say that to myself. And they're able to feel it and receive it, right? So not everybody has the kind of slow aversion that I have. Some people are on that side of the scale. After a couple of years of forgiveness meditation, I started to mean it. Not really feel it yet, but I started to mean it. I actually mean that I want to forgive myself, that I want to forgive you. Started to feel a little bit more worthy of being forgiven. But for me, it was a couple of years into the practice. And then at 5, 10 years, you know, somewhere. I remember at about 10, I said 10 to my friend that I was talking to about this today. Because at about 10 years in, I remember I finally came to this place, this moment, for the first time in my life, where I couldn't bring up hatred for anyone. And I thought of all of the people, all of the big ones, the stepfather, the, you know, the parents, all of the big resentments that I've been holding, and I tested it. And I was like, how about him? And I'd been sending him forgiveness for 7 years. And there was no charge there anymore. And I thought, oh wow, like maybe I'm getting enlightened or something. Like this might be it. This might be it. Like I might be. I can't. This is strange to not have any anger or hatred towards anyone, because my life was fueled by anger at injustice, anger, personal resentments, anger at the world, political, social. I was an angry kid. And a decade or so of meditation practice changed that. Now, I think that I like some of the scientific explanations for how meditation works. I like the neuroscience perspective that, you know, would say, yeah, you spend 10 years creating a new neural pathway. And rather than going down the habitual reactive neural pathway of resentment, you created a pathway in your brain of forgiveness that didn't exist before, of compassion, of forgiveness. That in some ways, meditation is training the mind, the neuroplasticity, and we are creating a new habit of mind. We can do that through repetition. Even if you don't mean it, even if you don't feel it in the beginning. When I had that experience and I thought, oh, maybe I'm getting enlightened or something, I was totally forgetting about impermanence, one of the key, the cornerstones of like that. I wasn't permanently free from resentment. I was just had one moment of being free from resentment. There's a lot of people that walk around in their life and have moments of not hating anybody. I just hadn't experienced that yet. I wasn't in some sort of Buddha realm. I was just finally taking birth as a human being that wasn't super mad. And that, you know, that had some, that had changed from the practice. I'll say a few more things about the forgiveness before we do it. When it comes to forgiving others, and actually, I'll just ask you, there's three categories. Self-forgiveness. What's it going to take for us to forgive ourselves, to train our mind to let go of the ill will, the resentment, anger, judgment of ourselves? Self-forgiveness. And then the category of asking for forgiveness. Letting go, and a transformation that will happen in deep asking for forgiveness, making amends, actually direct amends at times is part of the forgiveness practice. But in the meditation, it's not so much about the communication, although I think that's very important. You should absolutely apologize, ask for forgiveness, make amends. It's very important. But making amends doesn't necessarily instantly free us from the guilt or the shame of having caused harm. Sometimes we can say those words and they're a bit empty. Please forgive me. But still I feel fucking shame about it. Asking others for forgiveness has the potential not to alleviate all forms of regret, but it does have the potential to help us see that we were unskillful, that we were karmically responsible for our unskillful behaviors, but that we're not bad people, that we can forgive ourselves, we can be forgiven, that we were just in pain or confusion in some way. And so I think that the greatest potential here is actually to live with a healthy sense of regret, I do not believe that we will come to a place of not regretting the past or the harm that we've caused or experienced in the past. They refer to people that have no regret for hurting others as sociopaths. It's not a spiritual thing to have no regret. It's a psychological disorder to have no regret. Regret is the healthy response to having caused harm. We should absolutely have some regret, maybe even some sadness mixed in there with the compassion and the forgiveness when we've hurt each other. That's a healthy feeling of remorse or regret. But it's totally different than guilt and shame, which is, I'm a bad person. I'm not a bad person. But I've done some very regrettable things in my life. Does that make sense? That's the shift. Now, when it comes to forgiving others, in my early practice, my mind instantly categorized others into three columns. The never, no fucking way, I'll never forgive them, big long list. Never. And then a middle list that said, maybe eventually if they earn it. And then a list of, yeah, actually, I totally want to forgive those people because there's a mixture of love and appreciation and resentment, but I don't want to hold that resentment. I have some compassion for them, some seeing of their pain. So there was a, I want to forgive, maybe, nope. So maybe even just talking, opening the subject, maybe your mind did something like that tonight. There's some people you'd like to forgive. Some people that are maybe I'll get there. And then maybe perhaps your mind also has some reservations. Not those ones. Not the monsters. Forgiveness seems to work best when we take our time with it and we work our way up and we do this sort of when it comes to forgiving others. Start with the manageable ones. My father, who taught me this, he used the analogy of weightlifting. Forgiveness, iron pumping. He said, you go right to the biggest one. You say, I'm going to forgive Ronald Reagan tonight. Or whoever it is. And you're just like, I fucking can't do that. He said, it's like going into the gym and being like, I'm going to deadlift this 500-pound resentment. You can't start with the biggest resentment that you've been holding. He said, but if you start with the dumbbells in your life, the small 5-10 pound resentments, develop that skill, that muscle of forgiveness. Start with the annoying people in the sangha right here in this room. Person who breathes a little too loud while you're trying to meditate, send them forgiveness. Person who kind of like slip their shoes into your shoe slot. or somebody cuts you off in traffic or whatever it is, some rude people, difficult people at work. Start with the lower, maybe more accessible, easier, small resentments that we cop all day. I mean, how many times did you have a little bit of anger today at anybody? Driving, work, walking in here. You're also spiritual. You don't get mad. But start with the little ones and then work your way up. Start with the, I'm willing, I'm here, I'm willing. Work your way up. And as far as I'm concerned, my experience was, it's okay to say never to these ones and see what happens over the years of making forgiveness a regular part of your practice. My experience was that the categories, the columns collapsed. as I had some experience of forgiveness a few years in for the ones that I was willing to forgive, the maybes became I'm willing, and the nevers became maybe. And eventually the nevers became I'm willing, and I will work on it, and I'm committed to trying to experience my own heart and mind free from all forms of ill will, hatred, resentment, wishing harm upon any living being. And as I said, after a decade or so in my experience, I had that experience. I had that momentary freedom. And then I got resentful again. I had that experience of like, I'm free now. And then I copped resentments again. I didn't live in that state of freedom from resentment. But I tasted it. And that's something that anyone can do. We all can do. And then it's about maintenance. And it's about continuing to have the skill of letting go and having that mind habit of letting go of hatred, of having compassion and having forgiveness. Forgiveness, even the deepest forgiveness, sometimes doesn't get rid of the pain. It's like compassion. Compassion doesn't get rid of pain. It just is a soothing response to pain. The end of suffering is not the end of pain. Pain is an unavoidable experience in the human mind, body. There will still be pain. And even really deep forgiveness experiences that you've had, that I've had, when you reflect on why you were, you know, the person who abused you or betrayed you or whatever it is, it doesn't take away all of the pain of those memories. It just takes away the hatred in response to the pain. Forgiveness is the end of resentment, not the end of remembering painful experiences. We're just not meeting those painful memories with anger and hatred. Does that make sense? So one of the things I love about Buddhism is that it gives us a practical something to shoot for. I mean, even just forgiveness is feels like a high bar. But it's not saying, like, you'll forgive everyone and you'll have zero regrets and there'll be no pain in your past. No, all that pain will still be there, but you can develop compassion for it. You won't suffer about the pain you've experienced. Jack Kornfield, one of my teachers, and one of his sort of pithy quotes, he says, forgiveness is finally giving up all hope for a better past. Mm-hmm. And that sometimes we're like, we're trying to resent the past into being different than it was. It was what it was. Our past is what it is. Our pain is what it is. And we're all often making it worse. Compassion and forgiveness are our best bet at responding to it, at attending to it, and having a different relationship to the pain we've already experienced, and not creating more suffering for ourselves or others. Maybe that's enough as far as introduction. And we'll do the practice and we'll do it in the three categories. And I'll start with us with asking for forgiveness from the people that we've harmed. And this isn't actually the way I learned it, but I think it's a good way to do it. If we put ourselves into the place of humility, of all of us acknowledging, oh, I've fucked up once or twice. I've caused harm to others. I've been dishonest. I've been unskillful, I've caused harm. And we put ourselves in that humility of, I've been the one causing harm to others at times in my life. It also can put us into a place of understanding. We look at, well, why did I do that? Why did I lie? Why did I betray in some way or another someone else? Even if it's that simple, like not returning the phone call or the email or something that you're that you're aware that you caused some harm, hurt someone's feelings. And then that can help us move around to, like, well, why did people hurt me? What was going on for them? And their self-centeredness and their fear and their unskillful actions. We can relate more to our enemies when we put ourselves in the humility of, I've also been the one who's caused harm. And then we'll go around to the third category of asking others for forgiveness and then forgiving ourselves. And for many people, we feel like self-forgiveness is the hardest thing. With others, forgiveness doesn't necessarily mean reconciliation. Sometimes a really strong boundary, you say, I'm going to forgive you, but our relationship is done. My father used to say, I'm going to let you back into my heart, but never into my home again. Right? It doesn't mean reconciliation sometimes. And you say, I'm going to have a strong boundary. Forgiveness doesn't mean that we're good as far as our relationship. Sometimes it does. Sometimes it's absolutely that, but not all of the time. But when it comes to forgiving ourselves, we're so stuck with our own brains, our own minds. It's so hard to have boundaries with yourself. And you tell your mind, please stop abusing me. Please stop being so judgmental. Stop the comparing, the judging, the fear-based internal dialogue, but your mind doesn't obey until we've meditated it into submission, into a healthier internal environment. It's a long-term process to get the mind to actually become kind and loving and compassionate and forgiving. It's not a decision that we can make. Forgiveness is not a decision that we can make. You can say to yourself, I forgive you, but it's just the words. It's not going to actually stop the mind from continuing to judge. So you see in the instructions, I'll put the also making it a little bit more realistic by saying to ourselves, I forgive you as much as I can in this moment. Perhaps not perfectly, right? That humility. I don't like affirmations personally. I don't like lying to myself or others. And so if we sit here and say, I am happy, like, I'm not fucking happy, I'm miserable. I forgive you. And your mind's like, yes, that's bullshit. You don't forgive anybody. You just flip someone off in the car on the way here. So having the humility to say, may I forgive myself, or I forgive myself as much as I can in this moment, or I forgive you as much as I can in this moment, or please forgive me as much as you can in this moment, to give it a little bit more reality-based of the imperfection of the process of forgiveness, rather than it's going to be perfectly forgiven here and now. That's our intention, our aspiration, the direction we're trying to head in.
You have just listened to a podcast from Against the Stream Buddhist Meditation Society. If you'd like to make a contribution to help support these teachings, please visit againstthestream.org.